If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, equal housing lender, MLS 112-4061.
Wednesday at this time, Anna DeVlantis joins us for This Week in Chicago History. Anna, good morning. Let's start with a little restaurant history.
Okay. Do you remember Zum Deutschen Eck over on the north side, Southport and George?
Yeah. You know what? I don't think I ever dined there, but I do remember the place.
It was this imposing, like, Tudor-style, very, you know, German-looking building. It looked like you were... You were in Bavaria when you stared at that building. But 25 years ago this week, it was one of the largest, most popular and culturally significant German restaurants in the city, Bob. It closed its doors 25 years ago this week. Very lively spot indoors. It was known for, like, the atmosphere, the music, the accordion music, the men in lederhosen, the women in cultural dress, and everybody, the half-liter steins of beer, the wiener schnitzel, the old-world accordion music, the whole thing. It was really a fun place to go. Decor was, like, super low-key inside, they had basic tables. I pulled a Chicago Magazine story, and it said, the Zum Deutschen Eck dining hall looked better after a shot of Jägermeister. It was just a place where you went in, you know, you had a good time. It's so interesting, too, because Pat Bruno, a longtime Sun-Times restaurant critic, was talking about the food. It was known for being reasonably priced but really good, kind of German comfort food. And what he wrote was, there should be at least 6 degrees of separation between you and any vegetarian when you enjoyed their signature pork shank. It's as big as a wrestler's forearm. And that kind of paints the picture of what you got, you know, when you went in Zum Deutschen Eck. Just a place people had a lot of fun, ate well, and, you know, just dropped their airs. It was really kind of just a people being involved in, like, these big sing-alongs inside. Mm-hmm. So the sad part is, Bob, they tore it down and they built a parking lot. That's what it is to this day. The parking lot that currently serves the Athenaeum Theater. That is where it was.
Cool. Cool building, and there's a plaque near the spot there, but that's all that's left. This is
all that's left.
Birthday week for Michelle Obama, isn't it?
Yeah, this week, 1964, Bob, future First Lady Michelle Obama was born. Happy 61st to her. She was born at Mercy Hospital January 17th, 1964, as Michelle LaVon Robinson. She's just an excellent student, and she was known for that, was chosen for gifted programs and graduated with honors at Whitney before, of course, going on to Princeton and Harvard and then the White House after meeting Barack Obama in the city. This is interesting, though. She talked about the contrast between the life she lived in Chicago, the kind of, you know, middle class, solid middle class upbringing, that world she grew up in, and then the world she eventually inhabited in her book, Becoming. She gave an interview to ABC News shortly after making it to the White House, moving in, about growing up in the South Shore neighborhood and how all the values that her parents instilled in her about excellence and perseverance and education. She said that those values, while they played well for her in life, they actually caused problems back in the neighborhood sometimes because she wasn't acting or talking like everyone around her, and they noticed.
It was one of those kind of moments where it was like, you're not like us. And it was because of my speech. At this point, the viewers who are watching this, there are a lot of people nodding. Because when you grow up in the neighborhood, you know, you could get your butt kicked going to school if you looked too uppity or if you were studying too hard. So I had to grow up learning these two languages of, how do I fit in with my family and my community and still excel? This wouldn't be the first time that my identity would be challenged, you know, where people couldn't figure out who I was with how I talked and what who they thought I should be.
Happy birthday, Michelle, wherever you are.
Mm-hmm.
Let's recognize a Blue Man Group, and I can't believe they were around this long.
27 years ago, Bob. How many times did you see Blue Man Group? It had to be more than once.
I was forced to see it once, but then then I said, that's enough.
That's enough. Okay, well, maybe once is enough for you. I think I saw it three times. But it seemed like everyone who came to town wanted to go to see Blue Man Group. You know, when you had visitors from out of town, like, oh, let's go see Blue Man.
Yeah, you had to. Yeah.
You had to, right? But it's these three men covered in blue paint, and just to think that for three decades, they just dominated. They were packed audiences at the Briar Street Theater here in Chicago. They debuted, though, this week, 27 years ago, and the original guys, Chris, Matt, and Paul, who, of course, you never heard from because they never talked, they started off on off-Broadway, this whatever you call it, this quirky show, before coming to Chicago, but that's where, in Chicago, it was solidified as a hit, and their percussion music and everything they did, it was just, you just couldn't even describe it until you went to go see it. But we did find a clip of the original guys talking about the show's success. About 15 years in, they gave an interview about, you know, how they had evolved over the years to try to cater to what was happening in the world and to audiences.
The show's changed so dramatically. You know, the theater's covered with video and everything, so you can't teach an old dog new tricks. That's us right now. We're the old dog. But hopefully we won't embarrass ourselves on the stuff that we can still do. And no matter what, when we do the feast, even if all the technology fails, we'll be in relationship with that person and see if we survive feast.
Yeah, my rule is if you have to wear a raincoat in the front of the audience, maybe you give it a pass.
It's a no-go. It's a no-go. My favorite part, Bob, was the feast he just referenced when they'd stuff the marshmallows in their face and then it would shoot out their chest.
the kids loved it.
Grossness. I don't know. You know, farewell. Thank you for the memories, Blue Man Group, but we were equally simultaneously wowed and grossed out at the same time.
Nowhere to go.
That's Betty White singing. And Anna, do people realize she was born in Oak Park? Does everybody know that?
Oak Park native, yes. I mean, she was only here for a little while before going to the West Coast, but she was born this week, Bob, 1922, right there in Oak Park. The beloved Betty White. She started her career as a singer. She left us just shy of her 100th birthday in 2021. You know, it's interesting because she did everything in showbiz, and you think about her longevity, and it just kind of incredible. I went back and kind of looked through the different phases of her career. Yes, she was a singer when she started, then moved into radio. She hosted a live radio show before doing television in its infancy in the 50s. She came in right at the start and did everything in television over the decades. TV shows like Mary Tyler Moore, of course, Golden Girls, which made her so famous. She did movies, she did soap operas, commercials, including a Super Bowl commercial. Do you remember the ad for Snickers she did in her 90s, where she was knocking out football players? But Betty White was offered the Today Show. Listen to this, Bob, true story. She was offered the Today Show anchor job back in the day and turned it down, and it later went to Barbara Walters. So that's a fun fact.
Interesting.
Yeah, right. Like, she was just there and being considered for all these roles at that time when television was figuring it all out. We pulled a clip out from the Wayback Files, the lovable Betty White early in her career, early in her TV career, and she had just made the transition from radio. And they were asking her about this growing medium and if she thought she was a good fit.
It was like going to college to learn television because everything that could possibly happen happened on camera.
But what was the 5.5 hour a day show?
It was a variety guest interview type show on the old KLAC station in Los Angeles. It was either the Test Pattern or us. And some of the people like the Test Pattern.
Miss White, in your career,
Miss Betty.
Betty. You've won so many awards. Of which one are you most proud?
Well, the most exciting one was the Emmy, I must admit, because it was completely unexpected and one of those nights that you've just never forget. I was sitting there. I had gone to the dinner. I didn't have any better sense. And all of a sudden, I heard them get around to the category, and I was all sitting back just completely sure it was going to be somebody else, but your heart starts to go like this, and then I heard my own name. And I think I cried for 3 days. You know how you do. But it was delightful.
Yeah, Betty White, and she was born this week in 1922. Let's talk about the Pivens and the Piven Theater, Anna.
Yeah, you know, we bid adieu to a major force and respected figure in Chicago theater. Joyce Piven was the founder of Piven Theater in Evanston, and I know a lot of people have been weighing in about her passing and her contributions to the world of theater. Well, this week we celebrate, Bob, one of her many famous and accomplished students, Aidan Quinn, the working-class son of Irish immigrants who grew up in Rockford and came to Chicago to work as a roofer. He needed a job. He needed to make more money, and he came here for that. But this week, 1978, at the age of 19, he decided to contact the Piven Theater and sign up for classes, a move that changed his life. He could take these classes, he said, around roofing, you know, and it would work. So he could do nights and weekends and that kind of thing. And he said, you know, he always had this passion, this drive for acting, but he just didn't know how to fit it in and still make money. Aidan Quinn thrived as on stage and in theater and in TV and movies as a character actor, and just built this incredibly successful career, as we all know. Such a range, he was known for that, from Teddy Roosevelt to death row inmate. He played everything. We pulled a clip of him on WTTW, Bob, his early days as a roofer slash actor here in Chicago.
I was a roofer first for a while, a hot tar roofer.
It also says online that you're a roofer by trade. When was the last time that you actually worked on any kind of roofing project?
I was doing it full-time when I started acting when I was 19. I had one of those kind of epiphanies. I was sitting on a roof, and my friend, roofer, was probably in his mid-40s at the time, was handing me a joint with one hand. And my friend,
and roofing nails
my black friend from the South Side, was handing me a pint of whiskey. And the other, we were had our feet dangling over 26 floors overlooking Lake Michigan, and it was 7:30 a.m. And I looked at the joint, and I looked at the pint of whiskey, and I thought, how many mornings have we started this week like this? And I thought, this is not the breakfast of champions. I just remember having a moment. I handed the joint back, handed the pint of whiskey back. I looked out over the lake and I said, "That's it. I'm gonna take an acting class. I'm gonna try this. I want to be an actor."
Aidan Quinn.
Wow.
And finally, we have some advertising history, don't we?
Yeah, one of the most popular ad jingles in the history of ad jingles. In fact, Bob, debuted this week, created by Chicagoan the legendary Dick Marks, who worked at Leo Burnett and created so many jingles that you would know and remember over the years, and helped companies make billions of dollars in profits in the process of creating these, because they were such successful, really powerful ads. So the one that debuted in the 70s, we're going to play it for you here. See if you remember this earworm for a certain cereal for Kellogg's.
This Tumble crew has a plan, and they begin by digging into those two scoops in every Kellogg's pack.
Two scoops.
I'll keep them coming back for two scoops of plump, juicy raisins in Kellogg's Raisin Bran. Hooked up and in command. They're working now, but they're thinking how they lost.
Two scoops.
And Golden Flakes of Bran.
Two scoops.
They're turning back again for two scoops of plump, juicy raisins in Kellogg's Raisin Bran.
Written by Chicago's Dick Marks, right?
Yes. Speaking of Breakfast of Champions, go ahead and get that one out of your head today, Bob. See if that works.
Yeah. He wrote the Blackhawks theme and the old Channel 2 news theme. Not bad. Anna DeVlantis, This Week in Chicago History. Talk to you next week.
Talk to you then, Bob.